Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Beyond Watson, a conversation on the use of analytics to meet government mission. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Decisions based on bad information can lead to poor results and be quite costly to organizations. This may culminate in the squandering of opportunities, taking unnecessary risks, misallocating resources, and ultimately not achieving strategic goals or objectives. At a time of shrinking budgets and increasing expectations to do more with less, making better decisions based on informed judgment has taken on even more significance for both public and private sector organizations. In a world inundated with all kinds of information, timely, relevant, and more predictive data can drive better decision-making. What is analytics? How can analytics identify patterns, provide critical insights, and enhance decision-making? In this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, we will explore these questions and so much more with two very special guests. Tom Davenport, Distinguished Professor in Information Technology and Management at Babson College, kicks off this special edition with an in-depth conversation on the strategic importance of analytics and how government can leverage analytics to improve decision-making. In the second half of the show, David Shepler from IBM Research and Watson Project Manager joins me to discuss the real-life implications of the technology that is the acclaimed Jeopardy winner, Watson. What makes government such a natural fit for this type of innovation? First up, Professor Davenport on analytics and business intelligence.
Well, I really define analytics as systematic efforts to analyze data in a quantitative fashion. So that might be statistics, econometrics. Sometimes people get into textual analytics, particularly in the intelligence field. Anytime you use systematic analysis of data to help make a decision. Data mining is typically viewed as a subset of analytics. It's one of the things you can do in the analytical context. And analytics is really a subset of business intelligence. So I usually think of business intelligence, that's the broad category in the information technology field for what you do with data to help understand how your organization is performing and kind of what's going on in your business. And it consists of two things. There's reporting, which is simplified reports or queries or dashboards or scorecards, but that's all about the past and it's all about what happened last quarter, last month, and it doesn't really tell you anything about why something happened, and it doesn't go forward into the future at all. Analytics are the other part of business intelligence that starts to give you an understanding of why something happened, which is always useful, and then once you have a model that predicts the past, you can start predicting the future, and that's incredibly useful. So analytics, I think, is a more valuable activity than reporting, but you kind of need reporting before you can really get into analytics much.
Tom, government agencies don't compete, but they definitely have a use for strategic analytics. Would you describe how analytics and fact-based decision-making can assist government agencies?
Sure, Michael. There are a lot of opportunities, and I think while government organizations may not be competing on analytics, you're starting to see some evidence that they are transforming themselves, beginning to transform themselves through the use of analytics. You see it in certain sectors. Certainly, intelligence has often been about analytics, and they're heavy users of it and have been for a while. The big initiative there is how do we get different intelligence agencies in the United States to share all that data? Healthcare, huge issue right now. How do we use comparative effectiveness analytics to know which treatment is really most effective and most worth paying for? How do we use analytics to identify the patients who are most likely to contract diabetes, say. Diabetes and congestive heart failure account for only about 30% of the patients in Medicare, but they account for about 75% of the spending. So if we can identify a diabetes patient before they actually contract the disease and head it off through diet and exercise and behavior, you know, that's great for the government and great for the patient. So big initiatives in healthcare. Taxes, I'm afraid, are another area where analytics are pretty heavily used to kind of identify the people who might be underpaying or not paying at all their taxes and to go after them and to figure out really, you know, just as with other organizations, tax agencies have to segment their customers, so to speak, and identify the ones who are both most likely to be not paying and those who are most likely to be responsive when you're trying to collect, because you can't go after everybody with equal vigor. And then certainly in the military, there have always been a lot of analytical activities related to supply chain. The Army, in particular, very focused on kind of the human supply chain of how do we attract people to enlist in the first place and who's most likely to stay with us over time so we can kind of focus our efforts on keeping the people in who we think have a good chance of doing that. But all sorts of opportunities, I think, but still early days.
Tom, would you elaborate in the areas where you see the most effective use of analytics?
I think certainly for, you know, to make healthcare reform really work, we're going to have to, you know, not just insure more people and make it possible to get health insurance even if you have a pre-existing condition, but we're going to have to get better at how we actually provide healthcare. And analytics are often the key to that. You have some private healthcare institutions like Intermountain Healthcare in Utah, Partners Healthcare in my neck of the woods in Boston that have done some great work at embedding evidence-based medicine into actual day-to-day practice. So at Partners, for example, they have a semi-automated system that has care protocols that have been, you know, validated through statistics and research that, you know, if a patient comes in with a certain set of conditions, the system is going to recommend that the physician give a certain drug or follow a certain care protocol. Now, the physician can override, and that's pretty important, I think, in medicine, because the physician may know something that the system doesn't. But increasingly, we're going to do evidence-based medicine and not leave it up to humans to remember all of that, but embed it into systems. And that's what the VA did early on with their electronic medical record system. And increasingly, the leading private healthcare institutions are doing the same thing. Still a small percentage, but that's definitely the direction that it's going. In Medicare and Medicaid, the focus is, as you suggested, disease management to identify the really expensive cases that we can might be able to head off a little bit or at least treat more effectively, and then to identify fraud. Obviously, Medicaid is going to be done at the state level since that's how it's administered. Medicare is going to be done more at the federal level, and a lot of activity, obviously much more fragmented for Medicaid, but a lot of activity in both cases to eliminate fraud for people who, you know, file claims or whatever that don't really deserve to be paid back for them.
Analytics is playing an increasingly critical role in government revenue management. Tom, would you tell us more about the analytical applications in the revenue management area?
Sure. So the general feeling is that there's this phenomenon called the tax gap, which is the gap between what we should be paying and what we're actually paying. And most people tend to believe it's about 15%. So obviously that leads to a pretty big number if you can increase that through analytics. And so the IRS for a number of years, actually a couple of decades, has been identifying people who are not paying what they probably should be paying based on what other factors we know about them. It's called the Taxpayer Compliance Measurement Program. It probably could be a little bit more aggressive. I think the payoffs from doing analytical work in revenue management tend to be huge, roughly tenfold. So if I were a congressman, I would send money to the IRS to do analytical work because it really pays off in a big way. Sweden is probably, of all the tax authorities around the world, is probably the most aggressive one we found at using analytics to not only identify people who don't pay enough, but really to kind of build confidence in the tax authorities that, you know, the rules make sense and that people are encouraged to perform the right behaviors as far as their taxes are concerned. A lot of tax problems are errors, not criminal intent. And I guess a big part of that confidence in the tax agency is confidence that they'll get you if you don't pay what you're supposed to. But they've really built their strategy around it. And as far as we can tell, are the most aggressive revenue management agency. A lot of state work in that regard, too, in the United States. Massachusetts, my state, unfortunately, is they haven't come after me yet, but someday they probably will. Really big on using analytics. Texas is another one. So a lot of, you know, isolated efforts at the states in that regard.
And Tom, in your report for the IBM Center for the Business of Government titled Strategic Use of Analytics in Government, you outline the Delta model for assessing analytic capability. Would you describe the model and how these traits apply to the public sector?
I think, you know, even if you're just listening to the radio, you can remember this fairly easily. So D is for data. As you suggested earlier, Michael, you got to have good data. And organizations that are really competitive about this tend to think a lot about, well, what might be something new or unique that I don't have already in terms of data that could really help this process? So that might be at Harrah's, it's how frequently do the employees smile at customers. That's apparently a big driver of customer satisfaction. So they measure smile frequency. Postal Service has got a big effort to measure how long it actually takes time in transit to get a package through and what percentage of the time does it meet their standards. So getting that data is a big first step. E is for enterprise, and we found that when companies compete on analytics, they tend to view analytics as an enterprise, not as a bunch of little localized silos. So that's combining data, that's combining analytical people in many cases, and also combining, you know, technology and technology solutions. L in the Delta model is for leadership, probably the single most important thing. So, you know, if you've got somebody leading the charge, you'll do very well. In government, I think the best example of that is when Dr. Ken Kaiser was head of the VA, really led the charge on putting electronic medical records in place and starting to do things like disease management and so on with that data. T is for target. So where's your focus? For the VA, it's probably going to be on something involving patient care. For the Postal Service, it's probably going to be around something related to logistics as a primary target, because that's where you spend all your money and that's what creates your performance. For a private sector organization like a Harrah's, it's on customer loyalty. So eventually, analytical orientations can kind of spread out into a variety of areas, but you need to start with a target. And then finally, A is for analysts. If you want to be highly analytical, you need to either have some internal capabilities or you need to find them somehow. You know, maybe consultants or contractors can help in that regard, but you need some people who are able to think analytically, who can do the data analysis for you, and even more important, who can communicate effectively with decision makers about what the numbers say. So one of my research organizations calls that, you know, PhDs with personality. It's great to have the math skills, but you also need to be able to communicate and build trust among decision makers. The successful CEOs tend to be people who were analytical all along and they just made it to CEO, or they were viewed as being somebody who could bring this orientation in. You know, the guys at Capital One were analytically oriented consultants before they started the company. Gary Loveman at Harrah's was a business school professor and used analytics in his work. So the good news is that more and more people have been trained in this in schools. And so, you know, many of them forgot about it by the time they got up to be near the CEO level. But it's not that hard. You just need to ask questions about, you know, what are the assumptions behind this model? Are there any circumstances under which it doesn't work? Basically, as Gary Loveman says, you have to push back and ask occasionally obnoxious questions about, you know, where's the data? What's your source of evidence for this? Should we go gather some more data? And, you know, what do the data suggest? And do you think that we have framed the decision in the right way in the first place? That's part of the job, is just framing the question right in the first place and examining lots of alternatives.
What does the future hold for the use of strategic analytics in government? We'll explore this area with Tom Davenport when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.